You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
They seem to be business friendly.
Business friendly environment.
We have a much more business friendly administration.
Business friendly is, I don't know, I never thought about that.
Just what does that phrase, beloved by politicians, business friendly, really mean? We've been exploring that question on Stateside over the past few Mondays, from what it means to small businesses and big corporations to women and minorities in business. Well, now as we continue drilling down on this phrase, we'll look at what business-friendly means when it comes to education, brain drain, and the workforce of Michigan. Here now are representatives of two Michigan-based think tanks. Vincent Vernuccio is a senior fellow at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, and Lou Glazer is president of Michigan Future. Thank you to both of you for being here today on Stateside.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Cindy, thank you for having us on.
Let's go to the voices of people who are part of Michigan's business community, because we asked them, what do they believe business-friendly means? Let's listen to what a Dearborn business owner says.
My name is Abe Saad. I am the owner of Dearborn Meat Market. My definition of business-friendly would be like our workforce. We hire people that have full experience and that know what they're doing. I believe hiring people with good education, good workforce, good background history is my type of business friendly.
And we've heard that view spoken on Stateside before, that we as Michigan need to attract and create an educated workforce. So how do we do that? Is there something Michigan should be doing but is not to make this educated workforce available to business? Lou, I'll start with you.
Well, first I would say when we think about education, it's really interesting in the conversations I've been involved in. The enormous difference in the conversation, if the opening question is what education do you want for your kids and what education do you want for the community's kids, when it's your kids, nobody answers meet the needs of local employers. When it's about the community, a lot of the conversation is employer-based.
Why is that?
Well, who knows? Part of it very well might be that people think about other kids differently than they think about their own kids. So other people's kids is how can they meet my needs rather than what's best for the kids. So we've always started with the notion that you have to have an education system that does two things. One, that allows kids to create and pursue their own dreams, whether they're in Michigan or not. And secondly, all kids deserve an education that builds a set of foundation skills that are going to allow them to succeed in a 40-year career where none of us have any idea what jobs are going to be in 10 years, let alone 40 years.
Well, I would agree with that. And we have to remember that careers are no longer static. That
correct.
There's a lot of moving around, you know, especially you see now with the sharing economy, or they call it the gig economy. So things are changing. But what's really interesting is that 40-year career, that may not be for an employer. That may be for someone working on their own. And this goes back to that business-friendly environment where we want to make it as easy as possible for people to say, okay, I want to work for an employer. I want to have a traditional job, or looking to that next economy, the new economy, work for themselves, not saying this is what you have to do, but making it easier for those children to say, well, this is what I want to do, and this is what I want to do on my own, and build my own career doing my own job.
How much influence should business have in determining what gets taught in our schools and what our kids learn?
Yeah, I would say very little from my perspective. I just really think the odds are that fewer and fewer of us are going to work for an employer, and certainly not for any long period of time. So, and employers, and they should be, are very interested in what they need today. What employers need today is not that important to kids over the next 40 years.
And what's really interesting, though, is that a traditional four-year college education may not be for everyone. You have kids today coming out with massive, massive debt, shackled for their early adulthood with student loans that are incredibly difficult to pay back versus other people that are going into the trades. You know, I was able to go to the IBEW facility a few years ago, the electrical workers training facility outside Detroit. So their Earn While You Learn program, becoming apprentices and electricians. So we can't discount the trades and people going into that line of work, being able to come out with a job that pays very, very well and without being shackled with the massive debt that we see coming out of a four-year graduation rate.
Yeah, look, all kids should have an opportunity to explore all occupations and decide what they want to be. Here's the reality, though, a couple of things. First of all, most business leaders and political leaders who make that case, their own kids are getting four-year degrees. So the Fed just has done this amazing work. They do an annual survey on the economic well-being of households in America. And for the first time ever, they ask about your parents' education. If 21 to 29-year-olds in America, if you have one parent with a four-year degree, 71% of those kids get four-year degrees. 19% if both of your parents have a high school degree. So this once again is adults telling other people's parents to do something different with their kids than what they're doing with their own kids. Second, in the Fed survey, they do a very good job of analyzing debt in general and student loan in particular, and they find absolutely no data that there is this student debt crisis that everybody says that there is. Most people have debt, pay it off, and have higher incomes than if they didn't get a four-year degree.
I want to move on to another issue that has been certainly talked about a lot in Michigan, that so-called brain drain, where the workers, skilled and educated and trained workers, leave Michigan to pursue other opportunities in other states. We spoke with an economist and sought his thoughts on what it would take to make Michigan business friendly. Let's listen and talk about it on the other side.
So my name is Charles Ballard. I'm an economics professor at Michigan State University. The biggest problem that businesses in Michigan face right now is that they are having trouble finding the workers with the skills that they need to do the job that needs to be done. And what that suggests to me is that a business-friendly policy that would also be good for Michigan would be just a whole host of things along the lines of K-12 education, apprenticeship programs, training programs, getting students into community college or into four-year. That would be business-friendly because it would give those businesses a greater supply of workers who actually can do the work. And it would be good for Michigan because it would make us a higher skill, higher income, higher wage state.
Vinny, is that what it would take, do you think, to keep more workers here?
Well, what we've seen across the country is another thing to add is a right-to-work law. We saw massive population since 2010, 3.4 million people moved from 9 right-to-work states to right-to-work states. So something like that, a right-to-work law that you would say is business-friendly, that is pro-worker, giving workers the freedom to choose whether or not to pay a union and still keep their jobs, increases employment, increases wages, and also increases population.
So the normal brain drain conversation is about recent college graduates, right, where they end up. Basically, where they end up is in big metropolitan areas. You know, the main places are New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, and whatnot. And when you ask them why they end up there, two-thirds of them say they decided on where they wanted to live first and then look for a job. So this notion of having vibrant central cities, you know, is enormously important. We've always had placemaking sort of at the top of our economic development agenda. I agree with Charlie that this is a human capital-driven economy, and that's what matters most to employers. That's what Amazon basically said. And the state basically has not made that an economic priority and really should.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about what it means to be business friendly as we talk with Lou Glaser, president of Michigan Future, and Vinny Vernuccio, who's a senior fellow at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. So we're getting the views of two Michigan-based think tanks. I want to have you listen to a business owner from Ann Arbor and get some thoughts.
My name is Deborah Power, and I'm the president of Power Marketing Research in Ann Arbor. Business friendly does not mean things like incentives that don't really encourage growth. In other words, saying things like, you know, we'll offer Amazon all of these great incentives to come here, but it's all sort of a bit of puffery and a bit of, you know, that frosting on the cake. So, you know, business friendly is offering the transportation that people need. It's offering the employees that are well trained and encouraging them to grow locally and make local connections.
Deborah seems to be seeing like these business incentives in Michigan being offered to these big fish, these multi-billion dollar companies from elsewhere, and not enough going to where she thinks we need it most, the homegrown, local, smaller businesses. Lou, what do you want to say about that?
We have not been big fans of offering incentives to companies of any size. So, I mean, that stuff by and large has not worked. You know, and the Foxconn thing in Wisconsin's a good example of companies are going to end up doing what is in their best interest, irrespective of the incentives. We'd be better off without all that stuff.
Vinny, is that played out in Wisconsin where we just recently heard Foxconn saying, maybe not those blue-collar jobs that we said were coming to Wisconsin. We're going to do research and development. They're going to be white-collar jobs. Was that a bait and switch?
Well, Cindy, first, I have to start off with an apology. I know you wanted a debate between Lou and I, but when the previous caller started off with we shouldn't have incentives, we both looked at each other and started nodding in agreement. Incentives are not the right way to attract businesses. It's keeping it friendly across the board. Keep the environment good across the board. Don't pick winners and losers. Don't give special favors. And that's how you attract job creators.
I mean, we certainly agree on that, that this incentive stuff is, at best, it's the icing on the cake. And what we need to focus on is the base of the cake, not the icing kind of thing. And we've been doing a horrible job at that. Where I think we would disagree is what's the most important part of the base. From our perspective, the most important part of the base is developing, retaining, and attracting human capital. That this is a human capital-driven economy. If your goal is the economic well-being of Michigan households, human capital is what matters most. But I believe it matters most to employers. So to us, that is more important than having the lowest taxes and the lowest regulation.
I wanted to listen to the co-owner of Detroit restaurant, Tekoya, kind of talking about politicians, you know, talking about making Michigan business friendly.
My name is Philip Kafka, and I was an entrepreneur in New York and then decided to start purchasing and developing real estate in Detroit back in 2012. I very rarely trusted a politician who's an attorney knows what it means to be business friendly. So when politicians start to talk about how business friendly they are, that's just something they're trying to say to get my vote. Business is the process of action and movement, and law is the process of putting barriers on that. Being a lawyer or being an investor doesn't qualify you as a business person at all. Those are two totally different things than being a business person.
So are politicians, our lawmakers, are they in touch with what business really needs?
Well, Cindy, I'm going to tell you exactly what government can do to spur business. Are you ready?
Silence.
Silence. You know, I have a good friend, Wayne Cruz, at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He has a saying, you don't have to teach the grass to grow. You just have to get rid of the rocks. And I definitely agree with the caller. We don't need politicians picking those winners and losers, saying what is business friendly. It's removing barriers. Once again, going back to lowering that tax burden, reducing those regulations, letting job creators do what they do best, which is create jobs, and government getting out of the way.
Basically, the odds are overwhelming that we've got too much red tape, but I don't really think that that's as sort of important to a functioning, successful economy as people make it out to be. So, you know, I go back to Amazon again. Amazon basically decided in two places that offered them the least incentives, New York City, the most expensive place in the country, and suburban D.C., almost the most expensive place in the country, to put 50,000 new jobs. Google is expanding like crazy in Manhattan. All of these places increasingly are going to the places with the highest talent concentration, where talent is adults with four-year degrees. That is what matters most to economic well-being of both companies and households. To me, that's what economic success-friendly means and should mean.
We started out talking about business-friendly versus people-friendly, which certainly makes us want to kind of spend a bit of time here talking about issues such as minimum wage or sick days or health care, all very, very huge, complex issues that we're not going to resolve in this conversation. But the question is, how do we pay for these? What role does or should business have in providing a wage you can live on, sick days so somebody doesn't have to come into work sick because they can't afford an unpaid day, or health coverage? What role should business have in that?
You know, the Michigan Future Board, this is the one place in which we are split. So the one thing that we all agree on is that you want people who work, particularly people who work full-time, to be able to support a family. And we're also all agreed that at the moment, the market's not taking care of that. It's like 40% of the jobs in Michigan pay less than $15 an hour. But the split is do you do that through things like the earned income tax credit and government provision of health care, or do you do it through employer mandates like minimum wage, sick leave kind of thing? That's where the split is. But from our perspective, you've got to do one or the other. You either have to have public programs that boost income for working families, or you have to have mandates or some combination.
Well, I mean, one of the best economic programs is a job. I mean, at the end of the day. And especially for those just starting out in the workforce, they need a job to get the experience, to get the work ethic that is going to serve them for the rest of their life. And unfortunately, when you see by government artificially inflating the minimum wage, and especially if it gets raised to $15 an hour, you are going to price people that need that first job out of the marketplace, and they're not going to be able to get on that first rung of the economic ladder. They're not going to be able to get that work ethic and that training, and that's going to harm them, you know, in some cases for the vast early part of their career.
So our new sort of economic agenda for the state basically reframes sort of Reagan, a job is the best social program, to a good paying job is the best social program, which we firmly believe. The problem is that even in the highly successful states, high per capita income, high median household income, there is a proportion that's not 40%, but is close to that. And because there's so many low-paid jobs in the economy kind of thing. So some conservatives have used the earned income tax credit as an alternative to the minimum wage kind of thing. We just think you got to do one or the other. If you simply say that we want the government not to do anything to augment low-wage work. And a lot of low-wage work now is done by people raising kids, not just by, you know, if it's just for college students, it's fine the way it is, but it's not just for college students. So if you don't, you're going to end up accepting the 40% Alice rate, which every time I present around the state, I don't care what people's politics are, they're horrified it's 40%.
Well, let's just talk about the poverty rate. I mean, things are going well in Michigan. I mean, the poverty rate in Michigan fell from 17% to 14.2%. I mean, right. Those are—
It's progress.
That's good right. Progress.
But what of that 40%? What of that 40% who's left scrabbling to, as you say, make more money to be able to put a wage together?
They absolutely need to be making more money. And the way they do that, having a job, getting experience, working their way up the economic ladder, that's the way to success. That's the way out of poverty. It's getting that experience. And I'm afraid that when you raise the minimum wage to artificial levels that destroy those first jobs, then you're taking that rung away and you're actually going to exacerbate the poverty problem. So compassion is letting people that are just getting into the workforce get a job, get experience, work their way up. And frankly, it's good for business.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but it's really been terrific picking both of your brains on this topic of what is business-friendly mean to Michigan. Lou Glaser from Michigan Future and Vincent Vernuccio, Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.